Hello, this is Andrew Webb, pastor of Providence PCA Church, with a news commentary on an article entitled "Gunman Kills 26 at Connecticut School, Commits Suicide." I'm not going to be reading much of the article, if only because, frankly, I want to keep it together during this commentary rather than simply weeping at such awful news. The article itself says in part, Newtown, Connecticut, AP, "A man killed his mother at their home and then opened fire Friday inside an elementary school, massacring 26 people, including 20 children, as youngsters cowered in fear to the sound of gunshots reverberating through the building and screams echoing over the intercom. The 20-year-old killer, carrying at least two handguns, committed suicide at the school, bringing the death toll to 28, authorities said. The rampage, coming less than 2 weeks before Christmas, was the nation's second deadliest school shooting, exceeded only by the Virginia Tech massacre that claimed 33 lives in 2007. Our hearts are broken today. A tearful President Barack Obama, struggling to maintain his composure, said at the White House. He called for meaningful action to prevent such shootings, saying, as a country, we have been through this too many times. I wanted to offer some pastoral thoughts about that particular shooting, but first I want to read from Scripture, and specifically from Matthew 2:16 through 18. I remind you, this is the word of the Lord. "Then Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry, and he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in all its districts, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, weeping, and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted, because they are no more." Yesterday evening, my son Victor came home and he asked me, "Why did my teacher burst into tears today?" And the reason for that, of course, was that the nation's hearts had been broken by the news that 20 kindergarten children had been murdered in the classroom that morning. I had occasion also during the day to speak with a principal. I'd gone to speak with her on an unrelated matter, but it was obvious that she was also in shock. She just did not know how to respond to what was going on. And that's natural. It just doesn't seem possible that something like this could happen in the very place where parents, morning after morning, send their children to be nurtured and instructed. And it's not just teachers, although they were terribly affected by this, who were dismayed. I suppose, like countless other parents in America, I began thinking, after I heard the news, what if it had been my child's school or my child? And every sensible parent, I think, probably expects mishaps at school. Perhaps even something as serious as a broken wrist after a fall off the playground equipment. You expect that kind of thing to happen. But you never expect 20 children all around 5 years old, together with their teachers, counselors, and even the school principal, to be murdered. It's unthinkable. How could we bear it? And how will those parents who received that unthinkable news bear it? Now, as even the article mentions that I just read from, inevitably the fact that it occurred just 10 days from Christmas added to that pathos that we feel. So many Christmas presents already bought and wrapped that won't be opened by those children, for instance. I even heard one commentator on the radio asking, how could this possibly happen the time of year when the world was preparing to celebrate the incarnation of the Prince of Peace. At that moment, I was reminded that the story of Christ's incarnation also included the story of another massacre of young children. Matthew tells us in his gospel account that wise men, magi, had seen a new star and had known that it was the sign of a great event. The King of Kings, the King of the Jews, the long-awaited Messiah, had been born in Israel, so even though it was going to be a long journey, they set out to pay him homage. And naturally, given that they were going to find a king who had been newly born, they sought him in the palace of the current ruler of that nation, a ruthless usurper by the name of Herod. And they were surprised to learn that no child had been born in the palace recently. And so they inquired, where do we find him? Where do we find he who is born King of the Jews? And Herod who was equally concerned to find the location of that child, gathered together the chief priests and the scribes of the people, and he asked them where the scriptures said the Messiah would be born. Well, they knew. In Bethlehem, they immediately told him. For the prophet Malachi had said over 400 years ago that the Messiah, who would be the true shepherd of his people, would be born in the city of his great ancestor, that shepherd King David. And thus informed, Herod sent off the Magi to Bethlehem to find the newborn king and then report back to him that he might supposedly come and worship him also. We read that that was his reply in Matthew 2:8. But Herod had no intention of worshiping Christ. The news of the birth of the long-awaited king and redeemer of Israel, while it was good news to the world, was no good news to him. He was a man who had slaughtered his own flesh and blood because he suspected they wanted his throne, and Herod would stop at nothing to remove any threat to his kingship. Well, by God's grace, the wise men were divinely informed of that fact, and they disobeyed Herod's instructions. They did not bring back to him the location of Jesus and his family. But when Herod discovered that he'd been deceived by them, he realized that his hopes of quickly dispatching the Messiah, removing this threat to his kingship, were over. And so he devised this monstrous plan. If he couldn't find the child he wanted, he would kill all of the male children in Bethlehem, 2 years old and younger. And I think what happens is we become accustomed to reading that story, and we don't really absorb the gravity of what actually happened on the day that Herod's plan was carried out. Bethlehem, like the place where this school shooting occurred, Newton, Connecticut, was a small town. And what probably happened was that one morning around dawn, when all of the families could be expected to be still together in the house, Herod's soldiers suddenly invaded those homes, and around 20 or 30 families had their children, their little ones, brutally slaughtered as they watched helplessly. Now, as Christians, we rejoice that Joseph was warned in a dream to flee to Egypt with Mary and Jesus before the murders ever took place. But because of that, I think that it's possible that the true horror of what Matthew 2:18 tells us about is often lost upon us. Let me read those words. A voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, weeping, and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more. I mean, think about it. In one horrible morning, an unsuspecting town is suddenly filled from end to end with the sounds of wailing and mourning. Mothers hold the lifeless bodies of their toddlers and they weep inconsolably. And these little ones were their beloved sons, their little treasures, their hopes for the future. And they are no more. And these families don't even have hope that justice will be done. Because it's not a foreign enemy that's done this monstrous and awful deed. It's their own ruler. It's Herod. So who's going to give them justice? And what consolation can anybody bring them in that moment at the loss of their dear children? So friends, if we learn anything from this, considering the story that we read in the scriptures concerning the awful story that we just read in the news media yesterday. If we learn anything, let's learn this. The ultimate cause of the massacre in Newton, the massacre in Bethlehem, and countless other massacres that have occurred in between, the cause of all of them was nothing less than the total depravity of the human heart. Our sinful, fallen nature inherited from our first father, Adam. And let's remember that was the reason that Jesus was born. That was the reason he had to come into the world. He wasn't born to provide us with an excuse for celebrating December 25th. He wasn't born to give us an excuse for our presence. He didn't enter into the world to give us traditions. He was not born of a woman, born under the law, as Paul puts it, to give us wise sayings. He wasn't even born to do miracles. Jesus as Matthew tells us from the very beginning, was born to save his people from their sins. He was born to save creation from the awful effects of the fall. He was born to do away with murder and death. He was born to make it possible for this sin-sick world in which awful things like the murder of little children happens on an all-too-regular basis. He was born so that it might be cleansed of every stain of sin and replaced with the new heavens and the new earth in which righteousness dwells. That's 2 Peter 3:12. He came, Jesus came, that there might be a day when heartbreaking events like these might never happen again, a day when justice will be eternally done to wicked and unrepentant murderers like Herod, and a day when his redeemed people might enter into an eternity in which God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. Now, we are reminded by awful events like the murders in Newton of our terrible need for that work of redemption from sin and its effects to be completed. And so, as Christians, our hearts long for the return of Christ. They long for a final end to sin and suffering. And today I can honestly say, once again, I've cried out in my soul saying, "Come, Lord Jesus," that there might be a final end to the murder of children and all the things that cause it. So, in closing, I would encourage you all to pray. I don't think I really need to tell you what to pray for. It's obvious, but many of you may be having difficulty getting started to know what specific things to pray for. So here are a few suggestions. Pray for the families that are grieving inconsolably today. Pray for the children who witness things that no child should ever have to see. Pray for the emergency workers who came face to face with the carnage caused by monstrous evil. Pray for the doctors and nurses who struggled to save little ones who didn't make it. Pray for the policemen who had to tell parents that the worst thing they could imagine in the world had happened. Pray for the morticians, and don't think for a moment their job would be easy. Please keep in mind, brothers and sisters, these are people who are used to doing funerals for the elderly and the infirm. I have spoken with many funeral directors and mortuary workers, and none of them is undisturbed at having to prepare a little one for a funeral. It is a very hard thing. Pray also for those who have reacted to this news, as we see all over the internet and in the media, with rage and frustration and frankly hatred. Pray for those who, because of news like this, have given up hope. Pray that what Adam Lanza did, what he meant for evil, would be used by God for good. Now, with men, I know that's not possible. But with God, all things are possible. Pray that we, as a nation, would stop trusting in princes to provide answers to spiritual problems. And pray above all, brothers and sisters, for the speedy return of Christ and for a final end to the slaughter of little ones. Thank you.